Hello, and welcome to our second podcast with AXIS, a global feedback exchange for trainers, designers, developers, and auditors. Today, we are excited to share with you all some more information about personas and organization archetypes. I'm joined here today with some of our co-organizers. So my name is Ashley Fowler, and I work at Internews. I'm also here with Georgia, and she's representing Simply Secure, as well as Tiffany and Carrie from OK Thanks. And so,
hi,
hello, everyone.
Hi, hello.
Awesome. So, I think we can maybe go ahead and jump right into our topic today. And we just have a few questions that we'll run through over the next few minutes. But this is really meant to be an introductory conversation, and we'll be sharing out some more resources for folks who want to dig deeper into any of these topics. But to start off, let's just start with the basics. So what is a user persona?
Oh, pick me. So I would describe a user persona as a secure and privacy preserving way of identifying and understanding different types of people and their behaviors.
Excellent. Let's a great introductory kind of definition of what a persona is. And I think over the next few minutes, we'll explore that a little bit deeper and dive into, again, how these are created and what they're used for. I think it's also worth noting, in particular reference to this event, we are looking at a lot of at-risk users. And so what does it look like for at-risk communities to create and use these user personas to make sure that their needs and their experiences are still represented in the design and development of open source tools, as well as programming and other things. Stephanie kind of introduced us to a persona, which is capturing kind of an individual's needs or wants or challenges. But I think it's also important to note that there are organizational archetypes which look at the organization level. So thinking beyond the individual and thinking about how that individual interacts with their colleagues or with their community. So organizational archetypes build on user personas and often include some of the same information, but again, just with that more community or organization focus. So for example, the archetype might capture the specific types of challenges that people face within organizations, whether that's working on collaborative documents or perhaps using a shared password for a specific account that needs to be shared across multiple people within the organization. Archetypes are also really helpful for capturing the specific capacity of an organization. So sometimes it might look at the number of staff within that organization. It might look at their resources, you know, what financial resources do they have at their disposal? And then sometimes, even most importantly, do they have any technical expertise within their organization? And do they have anyone that can help them address those security challenges when they do come up? So again, we'll be digging deeper into each of these and talking a bit more about what is included in them. But I think the best way to talk about these is to perhaps jump into some examples of user personas and user organizational archetypes. So with that, I will maybe jump over to Georgia. Can you tell us a little bit about some of the personas and templates that Simply Secure has developed over the years?
Sure. Thanks, Ashley. Examples, and we can share the links along with the podcast that we have, look at not just the people who would be using a tool, but also thinking about people who introduce a threat or a risk to a tool. And we sort of have some templates that we've built that allow you to dig into defining who the person is, so giving a little bit so we understand their demographics or things that are specific about their regional or local context, maybe what their role is. We really like to include a quote that sort of captures a person's personality, maybe, or intentions or goal. And we'll talk a little bit about their behaviors, some threats that they might personally experience. And our security-specific template, which I'll include a link for, includes things like their technical expertise from low to high, or their needs around public or private information. I can share some examples in the resources as well. Hopefully that's a good start. The description of an example persona.
Yes.
I think that's sad. Yeah, we'll just
share those templates out. I think people will be excited to see the kind of outline of what Simply Secure includes in a persona. And just to, again, clarify, there are many different types of templates and different organizations and different tool teams like to include different types of information. So in this case, it is very technical focused. And so that's really useful for developers or others who might be looking at this to gain more information. I'll jump over to our folks at OK Thanks and see if you all have anything further to add about personas or templates that you all have developed.
Yeah, great. Thank you, Ashley. In regards to templates, we have a persona builder that we have pulled together. And this represents, for us, it represents the different types of factors that we typically would include in a persona. It's kind of like a full look at generally things that we consider gathering when we're doing personas. So that's available on our website. We'll also link to it in the resources. But the personas we develop vary from project to project, really. And it depends on kind of what stage in the process we're at and what we need to understand at that given stage. So one example that I'll share is it's been a few years actually since we put these together for our communities in Latin America, but there was a specific problem we were trying to address with a project, which was considering the needs of individuals that are using low-end devices and often have poor internet connections and are kind of constantly running out of data. So we're trying to capture from a cultural perspective, I guess you could say, what the needs are within that context. And those were a more broad look at individuals and what they're facing and kind of their behaviors within that environment. So like, if I'm constantly running out of data, understanding what people do in that case, do they just use it anyway? Do they turn to the radio for music instead? Do like what happens and what observations have our partners on the ground noticed that can help us in our understanding as we build products and tools that help people share files online or offline. So that's one example of one of the persona sets we've done. I'm happy to share more a little later as we dive into more about how they're used.
Awesome. Thank you, Carrie. That's super helpful to hear, again, how they're so different, yet still kind of resulting in the same output of a user persona. I think from the usable perspective, we've taken a slightly different approach. So whereas you all are often working with a particular context or with a specific tool team to really try and dig deeper into a specific community or a specific user base, when it comes to usable personas, we haven't really focused on tool-specific personas. Instead, we've tried to capture some generic profiles that would be applicable across a wide range of tools or a wide range of circumstances. I think it's also worth noting, for us, we have oftentimes relied directly on at-risk communities, so users themselves, or in some cases, the digital security trainers or the auditors who are working directly with these communities who already have this intimate knowledge of their users. We've relied on these folks to develop the personas themselves. And then Internews has kind of stepped in to help kind of review and scrub any sensitive information that might need to be redacted before publicizing. But for us, again, it's not really looking at a specific tool or a specific case, but rather thinking more broadly about communities, whether those be LGBTI users or environmental activists, and the specific challenges that they might be facing, again, at a broader level, not necessarily something that is tool specific. So again, this is a quick snapshot of many different ways that, or many different types of personas that exist out there. I spoke before about the archetypes. And so again, this is something that Internews has used organizational archetypes in the past to even better understand the projects that we develop and to better understand the needs of the communities with which we're working. And so that's something that we can talk a bit more about later in this session as well. But now that we've talked about kind of what exists and the different types of personas that are out there, I think it's interesting to find out a bit more about how these personas are developed and how they're created. So I shared a bit about the usable process, but Georgia, could you maybe walk us through some other processes that and ways in which these personas are developed?
Sure, I'd be happy to. Usually when we're working with a team, we will start from understanding the types of things. We use a couple different starting points. One is sort of understanding the types of tasks or workflows are made possible by a tool, and then trying to go from there to who are they thinking about or expecting to use technology? What problem is trying to be solved here, and who has that problem and who needs to have this tool work for them? And sometimes we go from that the technology out to kind of understand that context. A lot of times we will start from interview data, so talking to lots of people or communities that. And just understanding their needs, and then looking for themes and specific contexts, and maybe things that might be regionally specific or even role specific. So, like, what are the things that are important to a journalist versus a researcher versus a human rights organization? They might all end up using a similar technology, but the nuances of their needs might be something that we want to capture in a persona representing each of those different types of people. Sometimes we'll do that through survey data. Survey data can be useful as a way to get a broader range of participants to feed into that information. I think those are sort of the core ways. So interviews and surveys, thinking about it from a task and problem-solving perspective, and kind of iterating on those tools together to pull that into themes and contexts.
Awesome. Thank you. I'll just jump quickly over to our folks at OK Thanks and see if you all have anything additional to add to the process or how these resources are created.
Yeah, I wanted to build on what Georgia was saying. Georgia spoke about doing interviews to understand context and to understand different types of people. I will say what we have found is often personas are an outcome of the research done, and it's a way of synthesizing the data. It's a way of synthesizing what we've learned so that as we move forward in the process, our design team as well as our developers have a quick way to say, like, oh, hey, remember, like, we can't forget about Arlo, which would be one of the persona names that we could possibly use, but, like, it really is, they're a great tool in synthesizing that research so that we can keep our eye on the ball, if you will, as we move through these often, like, long processes of building technology and building experiences.
Yes, and just to add on to that as well, or bring home the point of how important the personas have been for us within our decision-making process, but also when we're communicating with the developers on the other side of the process. So we've done the research, we've synthesized it into these personas, and then now we're able to have, in a lot of ways, a more friendly and more approachable way to communicate with our developers about some of the design decisions that we may be wanting to make or that may make the most sense for the community speaking to.
Awesome. Thank you. I'll just quickly follow up on that and see if there's anything else to add about how these resources are used, you all as designers and kind of user researchers, but also what do those conversations look like when you're working specifically with tool teams? What are the questions that they're asking, and how are these personas or other resources helping to fill those gaps?
Yeah, I can just go in and say that one of the usual, like, next steps of activities after we've created personas is to think through sort of and create stories that relate to those personas. So how is this person solving this problem, and how does the tool fit into it, and therefore what does the tool need to be able to do? And I think that can be really generally useful and applicable to things like training. So if you know that you're trying to you're trying to help people learn how to use a tool to solve a specific problem, it's a similar process. Like, what are the contexts in which they are trying to do this? What problems might they run into? What's their day-to-day work like? And how does this fit in? And how do you build that into the way that you approach teaching? How do you build that into the way that you approach support and the way you think about the technologies and how they work?
Awesome. Thank you, Georgia. I think that also brings up the point of that we talked about earlier of oftentimes these tool teams, many of them are, as we've talked about before, are based in the West. they have pretty limited access to these at-risk users or these at-risk communities. And so despite their best efforts, it's really hard for them to understand the lived experiences and the day-to-day realities of these communities. And so personas give us that opportunity to present those cases and to present those experiences in usually a nicely formatted way that looks nice and allows them to feel more in touch with those users who they might not know or most likely do not know personally. And again, in many cases would probably put the users at risk if they were to connect directly. So these personas and these archetypes really serve as an integral kind of intermediary between these two communities, allowing them to communicate, but doing so in a safe and kind of monitored way. I'll jump back over to OK Thanks and see if you all have anything else to add around this question of how are personas and archetypes used in kind of day-to-day life for developers and tool teams.
Yes, thank you, Ashley. I would say this is in line also with Georgia, what you had shared about pulling out a story. Often we actually extract stories from our personas as well and use them as we measure the effectiveness of our designs, for kind of a lack of better way of saying it. But on a weekly basis. So like I just went through and worked through this workflow for that we need in one of our apps. And as I go back to that and measure like, okay, how is this doing what it needs to? And we often have this core user story that, for example, like a lawyer is running an online training and they within a group chat with 10 people and it's a sensitive conversation. So like that's the story is often helps me walk through that workflow or helps us walk through that workflow. But then like having that tied to a persona then allows us to go deeper and say like, okay, well, what else do we need to understand about this story? Like we know that many of the participants in the group or members of the group may have really low bandwidth connections. So like, what do we need to consider there? But it basically like opens up a more broad understanding of context, and again just makes that information super accessible because it's synthesized in that form.
Yes, and with that it also allows us to really to continue to consider people and behaviors and even threats and challenges that they may be experiencing on a day-to-day basis that we don't. And so just being able to tie that back to a story or back to a persona really helps us just continue to consider and be inclusive in the design process.
Awesome. All of this conversation kind of harkens me back to our podcast last week that was really focused on human-centered design. And so I think that's kind of the thread that pulls through all of this is at the end of the day, we're trying to humanize these users and making sure that the developers aren't just creating some abstract tool that serves maybe their own needs or the needs of their immediate community, but they are thinking about real people who rely on these tools to do their work safely, to communicate with their networks, and to maintain and stay connected and make sure that they have access to information. So I think that human element is critical here. Georgia, I'll jump back to you quickly.
Yeah, I think the one thing I just wanted to add is a lot of times, especially, and this is true for anyone working on any specific knowledge task, but talking about a developer for a moment, there are many ways to solve a problem. And a lot of times you need some frameworks or guidance to be able to say, this option is better than this because like we need to meet these conditions. So the personas and the stories that we're talking about, the sort of organizational constraints of an organizational archetype help to give you a framework for making those decisions, right? It's even just saying like, oh, we want an application to be as secure as possible, like that can be solved in a number of different ways, and security might mean things in different contexts. It might be really important that data isn't stored locally because theft of a device is a serious risk for a specific set of people, and therefore you don't want that data on that device because that adds risk to people. So where you might have decided, oh, the most secure solution is to do no internet storage, actually the opposite might be true depending on what you need to actually solve for. So I think it's not even just that people don't know, it helps. It just helps so much to have a guiding framework for making decisions when you're trying to decide which choice or which direction to go in. And a lot of that needs to come back to who what need is being solved for whom, in what context, and what are the sort of challenges we need to take into account.
Yes, thank you for highlighting that. That is critical to this process. I think maybe I'll just shift us slightly in a different direction. So we've talked about how designers and developers and tool teams more broadly use personas, but I think it's also important to highlight that personas and the process of creating a persona can be incredibly powerful for end users themselves or for digital security trainers and auditors. So in this case, I'm thinking specifically about during a digital security training. Sometimes if you're inviting participants to create this anonymized character or this quote-unquote fictional character, it's much easier for them to talk about hypothetical situations. And so let's say that I'm creating a persona and I'm going to name her Anna. And it's easier for me to say that Anna is maybe using the same password across three different platforms, whereas in reality, maybe this is me, Ashley, who is using the same password across multiple platforms, but that is embarrassing to admit and could possibly make me look bad in front of my colleagues or my community. So it's much easier for me to talk about very real threats and very real kind of vulnerabilities that exist in our workflows if we're talking about someone hypothetically. So I think thinking about personas as a tool for threat modeling is really critical. I think it's also important to consider the implications that personas and archetypes can have for trainers and auditors as well, as this really gives you a more in-depth kind of look into the communities and the organizations with which you're working so that you can design and develop your programming or your trainings or your digital security interventions to make sure that they're meeting the real needs and the real risks. And as I said before, it is just a very nicely packaged, nicely synthesized collection of information. So I think this has been a super insightful conversation, and I've learned things, even though I've been working with personas for several years now. So I hope that others are taking away some really interesting facts and learning something new from this discussion. I'll just pause and see if there's any closing thoughts from any of our guests here today.
I think the only last thing I would add is, you know, a lot of times we might say, oh, I know who I'm doing this for, I remember, or I'm definitely thinking about this person. I think also coming back to the framework can be really useful to be like, oh, I forgot to write down this, or I forgot this detail point. So even if we are experts in our own areas, that sometimes allows us to forget details because we're so used to doing the activities. So I think it's really useful. Even if you think you know, or you feel really comfortable with what you're doing, I think it's really good to circle back to it as, again, like kind of an accountability framework of, are we actually keeping track of all of the pieces of information that we want to? Are we addressing all the issues? Are we definitely helping the people that we are aiming to help? So, even for everybody who's been doing it for a long time, it's helpful to come back to that framework.
Yes, it's always good to continue the education and revisit and make sure that things are still aligning with our original goals and intentions. So hopefully, again, this is valuable for everyone. We also will be next week exploring how we create these personas and archetypes ourselves. So we'll, as Georgia said earlier, be sharing links to some of these examples that we've referenced on this podcast. So please do explore these a bit further. Look at these examples. Think about what you would include in a persona that was representing either yourself or your communities. And we'll look forward to creating some of these together next week. Thank you all for joining, and we'll be in touch soon.
Thank you.